I'm Amy.
I'm Wendell.
And I'm Patrick.
And
this is
Yes
But Why
Podcast.
It'd be really messed up if we did hear a baby crying and you were like, wait, Dallas is with Chris. I would be right through the window.
That must be the ghost baby. Ah!
Which, I'd much sooner deal with a ghost adult.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
Yeah, there's something creepy about a ghost baby or a ghost child.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess when you hear about, like, and then I saw a little girl walk away, it's like, yeah, that's messed up.
Yeah, children are creepy.
Why is that little child a ghost now?
Yeah, and...
like, I understand people, adults are angry, and they could potentially manifest themselves in the thing. Do you guys believe in ghosts? I mean, like, I'm clearly admitting that I do.
I am open to the idea that they exist. I don't want to, because it's too scary for me. I try to use logic and say they don't, but they probably do.
I think I'm getting to that age, which I've realized is like
there's an age.
Yeah, I was gonna say I've always believed in.
Well, like I'm just deciding to come around on more like the spiritual. Things a little more, and just being like, all right, maybe I don't know everything, maybe science isn't all of it, and...
Oh, yeah, okay.
But I just feel like, if there are ghosts, then the rules that we apply to them in our heads just can't be. Like, I feel like, if there are ghosts, then we're still making ghosts. So, like, there's just gotta be just, like, if ghosts exist, then there's just a bunch of random dead energies walking around. I don't think, like, they're all malicious. I don't know.
Like, yeah, well, does everyone become a ghost or just people with unfinished business?
Right.
I mean, who knows?
Yeah.
Right. I mean, and, like, if it's a kid ghost, then you can't have more unfinished business than that. Like,
because you didn't get to live your life. Yeah.
Ghost life that has to be is because all of it's unresolved. Literally everything is unresolved. It's not like you're a 50-year-old man who didn't get to tell his wife he loved him. Before the heart attack took him or some shit. Or, like,
sure.
You know, before he went down over Iwo Jima. And
I guess, to me, I think if there are ghosts, it's not about unfinished business. It's just, like, that's what we become.
Yeah.
So it's everyone. Which means, there are a lot of fucking ghosts everywhere.
Yeah.
Which I don't know. That seems a little... I don't know.
Well,
I don't know how I feel about it.
I feel like... My thought process on it to kind of meet it anywhere is it kind of gets a little too close to Scientology in the sense of, like, I think, like, people leave residual energy. Like, where...
Those Thetans on your shoulder.
Yeah, well, I just, like, if you lived in a house and you died in that house, then, like, your essence is there. And I think that, like, that can be, construed as a ghost or something where it's just, like, you put a lot of energy into that house, so that house holds the energy or whatever.
Yeah. I don't know. I think they exist, but I don't know. I don't know what sort of rules apply to them in any real way. It makes me think of there's a movie, Heart and Soul, for Robert Downey Jr. back when, like, you know, he was kind of on drugs.
Oh yeah, he has all the friends. He has all the people from the '50s that died in the bus.
Yep. There's like four other ghosts.
Sounds so familiar.
So he's a guy in the '80s, you know, as he was in movies, and he gets hit by a bus, and he becomes a ghost. And when he wakes up as a ghost, there are four other ghosts.
No, that's not the no.
Don't tell me.
This is my family's favorite movie. So he was a kid. When he was a kid, a bunch of people died on a bus. Like, there was a bus accident, and a bunch of people died.
I'm so glad you really know the answer.
For whatever reason, these six different random misfits became this kid's imaginary friends.
As a
baby in the crib, they would sing to him and stuff, and they were just attached to him. Like, literally, when he walked, they would be drugged. Like, they didn't want to, but they were connected to him, and they helped raise him. And then there was one day where he had to admit that, like, he was getting in trouble because he was talking about his ghost friends and stuff, and they were like showing him Playboys and stuff, and so. they decided to just disappear, like, let him not see him. And mm-hmm. then, but they followed him around his whole life. And then one day, they had to reappear in front of him because they needed to, like, resolve their shit. And they needed him to do it.
Oh, okay.
So they show back.
Oh, is he alive in the movie?
Yeah. So, like, they disappear when he's a kid.
I clearly misunderstood
the movie. And he's really sad about it because all of his imaginary friends go away. And then they decide that, like, in his 30s, that they need to reappear to him and ask him if they can use his body to resolve their business so that they can go to heaven. So they all show back up after he's like a CEO.
Oh, right. And they ghost inside of him, like in the movie Ghost,
mm-hmm.
Where they like go inside his body and then go have a conversation with somebody.
I think
I saw this when I was a kid.
It's a really sweet movie. They sing a sweet movie. Frankie Valli to it.
Walk Like a Man.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to be like, no, that can't be the same movie. Yeah, that's the part I remember.
Hank Azaria, the dad from Beethoven.
Kira Sedgwick, mm-hmm. Tom Sizemore.
I have seen this movie. I have it on DVD.
I realize I have a lot of things on DVD, but I no longer have a DVD player.
I'm in the same boat.
What am I going to do with
But I don't want to get rid of them.
No, I
feel like I should buy a DVD player.
Yeah, but where do you even buy one of those?
Or a Blu-ray player that also plays DVDs.
Office Max? Yeah. I would probably buy it online.
I mean, where I watch everything.
I know, me too.
My laptop doesn't show DVDs anymore.
When you buy movies online, though, do you get an actual file then that you keep on your hard drive? Or is it like I have Amazon, and when we buy movies from them, we never have a file. Instead, it's like in the library
of
his account.
Yeah, I don't even buy movies anymore. I just stream them or rent them because I'm not a big rewatcher. Mm. I rewatch shows.
Yeah.
So I have a lot of shows on DVD that I don't rewatch right now.
Right.
But a lot of them are on streaming. Like,
mm-hmm.
I have my sister's HBO now, so I can rewatch any HBO show I want.
Yeah.
Sorry, I don't mean to brag. I use my big sister's HBO account in my 30s.
It's okay. I think that's how everybody does HBO. We got HBO and, you know, we share it. You know, like, hey.
It's a barter system. Yeah. Streaming sites.
It's funny.
It's silly to buy them all. But anyway, yeah, I don't buy movies anymore.
Huh.
I don't buy albums either.
I've bought an album or two, because I like to, you know, if I want, like, the full album, all the files, like, we have a thumb drive of music in the car. And so if I want a particular person's album, you know, something, that way I can just listen to the whole thing. Because I used to love that. I used to love playing an album from beginning to end.
I still do that, just on Spotify.
Yeah.
But I did buy some albums before Spotify just recently acquired Drag City. So I do own a lot of stuff from Drag City because they weren't on there, but mm-hmm. now they are, so never have to buy an album again. Sorry, artists.
Sorry, everyone. I hope Spotify pays you. Taylor Swift will probably yell at you if you don't, so watch out.
Yeah, I can't have Taylor Swift talking bad about me.
Are you
my
in charge?
My reputation is so teetering on the edge that if T Swift comes out against me, then I might as well just pack it up.
It is wild that she will come out, has a stance. It's just such an extreme privilege. Like, I will take a stand against Spotify, but white supremacists holding me up as a poster child, I'm not going to say anything.
Yeah.
Kind of blame them.
Not, yeah. Like, the rich people are so afraid to lose their wealth.
Yeah.
That's the motivation behind a lot of negative stuff, is just fear that they won't have the money that they, you know, that provides them the luxurious life that they have. And they're so fucking used to that luxury that they don't even see it as luxury anymore.
Well, that's the thing. When you look at her, how old was she when she first started getting success? Like 16?
Yeah.
So she, no matter what her deal is obviously going to be really fucked up.
Sure.
You know, there's no way you can come out of that normal when you have millions before you're old enough to be legally in charge of that.
Right.
That's wild.
Yeah.
I mean, look at, like, Macaulay Culkin, which he actually came out pretty decent.
It took a minute.
Yeah.
It took a, like, we were all not whole sure. cycle.
We were all very concerned. But, like, recently, like, I saw an interview where he was just talking about, like, he was, like, way on top of all of it the whole time, and he, like, managed his money very well and, like, made sure his parents didn't get a dime of it and put it away, and then I think he finished with Richie Rich, and he was like, I'm done. And he still has, like, most of his money he made from, like, the movies he did when he was
wow.
a kid.
He can take as much credit as he wants, but realistically, his parents were the ones who didn't steal his money.
Well, yeah.
You know, like, because technically, when you're a kid, your parents can fuck you over whatever way they want. Like, I know that there are more laws about it, for sure, but I think, like, they still have a lot more.
But I think his dad tried to. I think it was his dad. It might have. One of the parents was, at least in the tabloids, like, there was a big old custody fight, and, like, it seemed like the dad. I might be confusing him with Lindsay Lohan.
I was
going
to say,
because I think they had a similar situation.
Emancipated, though. I think he emancipated. Like, in maybe. Not, like, an aggressive way, but, like, in a just, like, they made grab for it. He was just like, no, I earned this. You guys didn't do shit.
Well, he might have had a good lawyer, because most performers, like, if you're going to be a performer that's going to make money, and the only way to truly protect you is to LLC a business that is you.
Mm.
And so that way all the money would go into that, and technically if he and his lawyer are the people in charge of that LLC, his parents potentially could have no access to the money. Because it is being paid to him. And as long as there's a lawyer, you know, as the guardian in that scenario, I think it should be fine. But I remember hearing a few, like, comedians talking about that. People who are, like, on the road a lot, about how it's important to, like, keep the business a separate situation from you, like, legally and, like, tax-wise and stuff. So I was like, huh, okay. And my husband and I recently turned our, like, freelance work into an LLC in an effort to, like, protect ourselves if anything goes wrong.
So does that mean, like, I know nothing about any of this stuff. I don't. I have a savings account with nothing in it. So does that mean, like, if someone were to sue you, the LLC would protect your assets? Is that the idea?
It means that the stuff that is considered belonging to the LLC could be affected, but the stuff that belongs to us as private citizens could not be. Like, so if we rent this house, but say we owned it, they can't sue the business that we work at and get our house or our car. Those things belong to us as private citizens. My husband owns a significant amount of, like, sound equipment and stuff like that, and that is the assets of the business.
Right.
So in the off chance that somebody sues us and we have to sell off assets, it's that stuff that has to go to pay for the business in that way. So we can lose the objects that are, you know, the sound equipment and the speakers and stuff, but nobody can come and try to hurt us or later try to hurt our son, you know, when he gets older or when he's over 18, you know, trying to anything like that. Our business won't affect him.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
So it's like a different way because we get paid in so many different ways from so many different companies, but it's all the same industry. So we just became a company, like an entertainment company. And then every single job that we do falls under that. And we just put it all in that way.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just took a bunch of loans out in Dallas's name. Let him sort that out later. No. You guys got claimed parts of the house as, like, an office space?
Sometimes they let you, but sometimes they don't. Right now we have a new tax lawyer, so we'll find out more of that. But he's just been... We just started using a tax lawyer. And it's a person in town who's, like, specifically... for freelance people.
Okay.
Like, his specialty is musicians who travel around and tour and do all that stuff. And that's great because that's the same kind of thing. My husband travels around doing conventions and then, you know, we get paid without taxes and all this stuff. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, so he helps us with our business taxes and our personal taxes. But this is the first year that we used him, so I haven't really... I honestly haven't sat down with him yet to, like, go over everything. He was just like, I've got you taken care of. And we were like, thank you. And then as soon as Chris has a minute, Chris has been away for weeks when he gets back for like more than 2 or 3 days, we'll probably set up an appointment to go talk to him. But, and I'll report back if there's any cool business information. But
yeah,
I don't know. I'm just learning. I'm figuring it all out. I'm trying to get better at it because for so many years, like I haven't had a regular day job in maybe 5 or 6 years, and I've just made money doing random gigs, which is really hard.
Yeah.
But it's even harder at the end of the year to keep track of it all. And to do the taxes that don't make me have to pay millions of dollars. So things like you know, deducting part of the house was something that we were trying to do. Whether or not that was the right thing to do or the best thing to do, I don't know. I mean, the studio that we have in the other space, 100%.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
full on. We have another studio. Sorry, we're not at the other studio, but me being home with the baby, I've been recording here, and then my husband uses the studio more often, but we like rent a space.
Oh, okay.
And it's filled with all of our equipment, and it's just ours. And so that, that we write off all the time because it's essentially an office.
I work from home part-time doing contract work, and I've always been able to write off. The rule is if it's a separate room and that's the only purpose for it.
Oh, cool.
You can, right. That's what I've been told by multiple accountants. Yes.
Good.
And then they do some math, square footage, percentage of your rent thing to figure out how much you get to write off.
Oh, okay.
But I don't know if that would conflict with the LLC thing. And like,
that's hard to know.
Putting a stake up.
I have no idea.
Your personal stuff.
Yeah, it's hard to know. I mean, certainly we could use the, we could count out his office, which is just sound equipment, and then the garage is just sound equipment, but
they just come and lift that room up.
Well, you know, they can square footage it, you know what I mean?
Yeah, they just chop off part of the house.
We don't own the house, they can't have the house.
Yeah.
The house does not belong to us. It belongs to a very nice lady who lives in California and doesn't know anything about Austin real estate. And thank goodness doesn't listen to this podcast.
Those are the best landlords.
Yeah, they really are. The ones that like don't get that it's not like 1990 Austin. I'm like, okay.
I had one of those for 5 years, and then someone contacted them and they figured it out and they sold the house.
It's tough.
Yeah. Which, I mean, good for them. They deserved it, but
you earned it by holding that house
that
for so many years.
Was such a shock after 5 years of paying already under market rent to have to find a new place when the rent, like, I was paying $450 a month for my own giant bedroom and bathroom in this 3-bedroom house in Hyde Park. Did have rats, so there's that.
Like, were they like crawling around your like
They were in the attic.
Okay, they weren't like in your bedroom.
One time I found one in my bedroom and I lost it.
See, being above you is worse. I think I'd rather find out that they're in the basement. The idea that they're like traipsing about above my head.
Oh yeah, it was definitely like I didn't love it. And they had a real interesting approach of like, we're gonna set a trap, come back in a week and set another trap. And I was like, I think there are structural issues with the house that these rats are getting in and nesting. So it was good that they sold it.
Sure, because they probably had to fix those structural issues before they could sell it.
No, they sold it, as far as I know, sight unseen. Because we never knew it was for sale until it was sold.
Oh. So, like, nobody, like, came in and looked
at it? Nobody looked at it.
Whoa.
Somebody just bought it. And I was...
I wonder if they tore it down.
They didn't.
Have you seen it?
Oh, I drive by every couple of months because I feel like that must be what you would do if you're spending this money. And there was a huge backyard. Like, they could do the thing that everyone does where they turn it into two lots.
Sure.
I assumed that was definitely what was happening. And maybe they're flipping it and living in it, too. But it looks exactly the same from the outside. I'm like, what? Because they must have spent so much money on this house. And it has, like, rats.
Huh.
But
the only time I've ever experienced rats was in New York City. I lived in Harlem, and there were rats that would walk in the front door.
Oh, my God.
Because the front door of the apartment had, like, a big gap underneath it. And I was like, Can we fix that gap? And they're all like, oh, yeah, we'll get to it.
Mm-hmm.
And then when rats were just walking in underneath the thing, and we were like,
what's
that?
Just picturing them, like, strolling around.
Well,
it was a really long hallway to the bedroom, so it was like you looked down this long hallway to the door,
uh-huh.
And then there were a few bedrooms off the side, but it was like, yeah, when they came in, they were taking this long... You know, I would sit there in the chair like, oh, God. It's coming towards me. And it's like, nothing to be done, because they're just moseying. Like, it's not like...
They were just drunk, getting off, like, a 10-hour work day, like, hanging their hat up, mad as shit. Like, have their own little, like, coat rack for some reason.
Yeah, they're New York rats. I'm walking here.
Yeah, but they're
in the hallway.
So it's like, you know, that's nice.
Yeah, no, I had a very dramatic rat situation at one point, but...
They're kind of cute if they weren't... in my house when I don't want them to be.
Sure!
Like,
that's probably the
creatures.
Case with most animals.
Yeah, like the one, there was one in my bedroom at one point, and they put a glue trap down, and they got it, and I lost my shit. I was so upset. I, like, had to stay at a friend's house. Like, I couldn't deal. It was just so sad, and I felt like it was my fault. I should have, like, bought a have a heart trap, and I was like mad at the landlord, so I wanted them to deal with it, but then I did not like how they dealt with it, and I was like, well, this is the lesson you learn.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was real sad.
Can I just say that I'm kind of glad that the glue trap was the proper size, because the glue trap that we tried to use for this rat in New York only went on one of his feet. And then he flapped around the house with it for a while, and we were like,
yeah.
It was comical.
At that point it's like, well, he deserves to be here as much as I do, I guess.
Mm-hmm. That's the thing, it's their home too.
Right. That's like Bugs Bunny level getting around like the human kind of thing. It's like, alright, well, I tried. He beat me. He gets to be here.
And
I don't know where he is all the time, so that's a good thing. In the sense of, like, I'm aware of where he is.
Yeah,
if
you could just put jingle bells on them, then it would be fine. They wouldn't surprise you.
Oh my God, but would you imagine for a minute you're in your room, you're going to sleep,
jingle,
and
jingle.
It's just jingle, jingle, jingle everywhere all around. You're like, ah! I'd be so afraid of the scary jingles.
Yeah.
Can I ask, like... personal opinion, would you rather have rats or roaches?
I mean, I...
Rats.
I don't...
Yeah, I think so too. Because, like...
Have you ever had a roach infestation, though?
That's the thing.
I've never had an infestation. We've had them before, but, like... They don't bother me.
When you become aware of roaches, it's already too late, I think. Like, when you are just like, oh no, I have a roach problem. You see, like, the babies and stuff in the bathroom and shit... Then it's gone. It's already out of hand. I feel like rat population is only going to get so big, like, within...
See, we had a really bad one, though. And my closet, when I moved out, because, like, I had all my clothes blocking it, so I didn't know. When I took everything out, the closet, like, walls smelled like rat pee.
Mm.
And I was like, this is the most disgusting thing ever. So I think because of that, I could never... do rat again.
I feel that because of your experience, that totally makes sense. Because of my experience with the roach infestation, that's why.
Yeah.
I mean, it became, after the second or third month, it was like trauma. Like, I was like truly in a traumatic situation where every day I was killing hundreds and hundreds of them.
See?
It was terrible. And we bombed our house so many times to trying to get rid of them, and they never went away, and we complained to the apartment complex, and then it turned out that our next door neighbors were hoarders, and it was their grossness that was leaking over into our place. So, like, we were doing...
Yeah.
We were like, our apartment is spotless.
Yeah.
There is nothing here. It is so... Come on.
Yeah.
And then they were like... well, let's just check this. And
yeah.
Then they were like, oh no, your neighbors, we are kicking them out because this is unhealthy and horrifying. And we were like, what? So it went away eventually. But, I mean, it was 6 months. You know apartment complexes. You go to them and they're all like, yeah, we'll get to that at some point. And you're just like, I'll kill you. Like, mm-hmm. Their lack of, like, at least pretend. All I want is for you to just pretend like you care. When I leave, laugh at my ass all day if you'd like. But for the moment I'm standing there, I want you to give me, like, a heartfelt, oh, really? That is...
That must be really hard for you.
Yeah, we will do whatever we can to help you. And then, you know, fuck off after that if you want. Don't do your job. I understand. But, good Lord. Like, I was so traumatized. It was very rough.
Yeah.
So I you being traumatized by the rats, I totally understand why you're...
Well, I forgot
the
worst part. A couple times we had them die in the wall.
Oh, and
that is a smell you never forget.
Oh, yeah.
It is so disgusting.
Well, I was going to say, because, like, an aggregate of roaches, if you have, like, a bad infestation, does have a weird smell to it.
Oh, really?
It's, like, weird and, like, ammonia-y. But, like, if they die...
Nothing's worse than dead rat.
Rotting rat is the worst thing.
Yeah.
Nothing.
Yeah.
100%.
It's so disgusting.
Wow. Yeah. I don't know. I think, like, the only reason I still, like, choose rat over roach is just because I feel like rats have just a little more common sense not to go, like, crawling around on my face while I'm sleeping or whatever, you know? I feel like roaches, like, if they get big enough, they will
just be
wherever. And I just feel like, you know, if, like, rats, I'm at least never going to be covered head to toe in rats, and there's going to be, like, there's going to be a manageable amount of rats in a room at any time because they kind of work in coordination. Like, I could just wake up, literally, and just covered top to bottom, like Temple of Doom style, just in roaches, I feel. And I'll always have that weird, like, psychosomatic itch.
That's kind of likely, but they're not really gonna, I mean, unless you're sleeping in the bathtub, I feel like you're not really, it's very unlikely.
Yeah.
Do you have a water bed? You know what I mean? I'm just saying. My infestation was at the kitchen sink. It was the kitchen sink, the whole area. I lost 3 or 4 appliances to it. Yeah, I lost a...
The blender belongs to the roaches now.
we had to toss out a toaster and a microwave.
Wait.
Oh, no. Did you accidentally toast roaches?
Did they get, like, in the wiring and stuff?
Yeah, they were just inside the whole thing. It was just like we went to, like, look at it one day, and it was just, like, filled with roaches. And I was like, well, we're throwing that in the trash.
They just all showed up and then took it and pawned it for drugs.
That's what happened. Roaches super into crack cocaine. Yeah. Luckily, I lived in the neighborhood. Your neighborhood, actually.
All the copper wire got taken. We actually, at this house and another house I lived at, had rats, but not as bad, in the attic. And both houses, the heaters got wiring got chewed through. Which in Austin, you don't use heat very often. So you go to turn it on. It was working, like, 2 weeks earlier. And all of a sudden, it doesn't work. That happened at both houses because the rats chewed through wires.
Wow.
I love old houses.
I guess so.
I love mid-century architecture.
But when you move from place to place, how many years have you lived in Austin?
I've lived here for 11 years.
11 years. And each time you move... You, like, seek out a specific style of architecture?
No, I just like cute houses and, like...
Like, lived-in kind of things?
Yeah, like, I definitely lived in one house because it had a telephone stand.
wait, like
those little...
Like the cup?
No, just that little stand. You see them in a lot of, like, bungalow-style houses in Austin. I'm sure y'all have seen them. It's just, like, a little shelf in the hallway.
Oh, yeah.
That is why I moved to a place.
Yeah.
So I'm not a logical human. but this most recent house that I'm currently living in is a new build, and I don't like that. Like, I don't like the way it looks outside. I'm just like, ew, it's ugly. But I'm so grateful that, knock on wood, we don't have any animals that are not supposed to be there, just the dogs.
Right. Yeah, it's hard because the houses that they make now are, like, you know, particle board and, like, some cardboard, and you're like, oh, okay, I hope this stays together.
Yeah.
But, because I've worked a number of model homes.
Uh-huh.
I've been the person who's sat in the model home to, like, go, yes, please, go over here and check that out. and I'll sit and watch them making the houses, and I'm like, what are the materials here? Where are they? And it's just so many, you know, it's just such a wild sort of, like, fast, you know, you blink, and you're like, wait, they're done with that house? Yeah. How did that happen?
Well, you see that everywhere in town. You, like, drive by a spot, and then a week later, it's all built, like, a huge apartment building.
Yeah.
It's like, how did you do that quickly? That doesn't make sense.
Wait, half the construction crew is cockroaches. I feel like there's a scheme going
on. I wish. If we could get them to work.
Well,
guys.
Cockroaches. I think, like, the older houses, too, were probably harder to infest. Like, it probably, like, they're infested now, but that probably took a lot of doing on the rats. That probably took generations of rats or roaches
trying to get in.
And it took, like, wear and tear. Whereas I feel like the newer houses are much more susceptible. I think, it's like...
That's probably true.
It took erosion on the other ones.
Yeah.
All of them, like, for years, just one rat trying to get through the concrete. I'll make it someday.
Yeah. Like some weird, like, Greek allegory for just, like, these, like, generations of rats. And then, like, great-great-grand rats get in. And I'm like, thanks, Papa!
Yeah.
I'm gonna scare this lady every night.
I love it! It's my wonderful life!
Fievel goes west!
Hey, can I... I realize that we've talked for a while and we haven't talked to you about theater at all. And I was like, hey, we're gonna talk about theater. Tell me how you started. What was the first thing that you ever did in theater?
Well, I always wanted to act as a young kid. So I was in, like, elementary school plays. There was a probably racist play called Ming Lee and the Magic Tree that we did in fourth grade. And I'm from Maine.
Mm-hmm.
So 95 to 99% white kids doing this play that took place in China. I don't remember much about it, but I do remember looking back now, like, we probably put white makeup on. I don't really remember. No, this was, like, one of the plays that, like, elementary and middle school drama teachers could order.
I see.
And this was, like, early 90s, so, like, people weren't super, thoughtful.
Yeah.
And, like, I'm sure, I mean, it wasn't, like, saying anything negative about Chinese culture. It was just, like, appropriation. It was probably seen as, like, oh, this is so cool. We're learning about Chinese culture. Like, I'm being so cool.
Yeah.
But not really. So I was in that. And then I don't remember what the fifth grade play was. But I basically did plays all, every year, forever after that.
That's great that there was, like, an elementary school theater program. I don't know that I've...
It was just fourth and fifth grade.
Oh, really? And then junior high, they were like, listen, you're going to be awkward, so we're not going to try. And then...
Oh, no, we did in junior high as well. I meant... Oh. In elementary school, you didn't start doing the plays until fourth and fifth grade.
Oh, sure.
And actually, the lady who directed them was also the high school drama teacher. I think she probably needed more work.
Sure.
Being the, like, theater teacher in a small town in Maine. So, she directed them. Or maybe she only did middle school. It doesn't matter. she might have directed them all. But I started doing acting classes when I was, like, fifth grade, sixth grade, making my mom drive me all over Maine. I had an agent, but I think it was kind of a scam.
Oh, no.
I mean, not really. I just had to pay. My parents had to pay. She did get me some auditions, but, like, basically she had a lookbook of your headshots.
Yeah.
So, like, I had made my parents get me headshots. This was in high school.
Yeah.
I got headshots, and you had to pay, like, $100 to be in the book for the year.
Sure.
And then I did get a few auditions from it, for, like, movies that were being filmed in Maine, so, like...
Stephen King stuff?
No, these were, like, things that probably never actually got distributed in any way. And then I went to theater... I went to college. I didn't go to a conservatory, because my parents were like, we're not going to We're not going to quite pay for that. We love you and we believe in you.
Yeah.
At least liberal arts. But you can major in whatever you want. So I majored in literature and theater. Just as practical. They should have just paid for me to go to Emerson.
You would have been closer.
Yeah, I know. Well, part of the appeal for me was to not be closer. So, but Emerson was my first choice. And they were like, we're not going to send you there because it's too expensive. And you're just going to study acting. So they sent me to hippie school in Florida, where I studied literature and acting.
What school?
New College of Florida.
Mm-hmm. I love the name.
New College?
New College, yeah, of Florida. I just like
that. It's based on, there's a school at Oxford called the New School or the New College that was like, revolutionary. The school started as a private school in the 60s, and it's just like the most hippie school ever. Like, no grades. We got narrative evaluations. It's very similar to Hampshire or Reed.
Oh.
We got narrative evaluations. Every semester you wrote a contract with your advisor about how many classes you would pass. But it was like an honors college, so it was like rigorous, but very like hippie. Everyone's in Florida, so everyone's barefoot. So many drum circles. Like, which I did not like. I was not, like, about that life. But,
See, Florida's, like, as I've discovered over time talking to people in this podcast, Florida's, like, a lot of stuff. It's, like, it's a bunch of different things.
Yeah.
Like, you can't just say, like, Florida is, like, a bunch of swamp people or a bunch of retired old Jewish people. It's like, it's a whole bunch of
so many more people than that.
Yeah, yeah, no, there's like quadrants to it.
But it was so weird going there.
Disney employees, you know. Yeah, there's that whole crowd.
Yeah, as an 18-year-old, I hated Florida. And I was like, why would I ever go to school there? It's all old people.
Sure.
Because my grandparents would go down there for the winter.
Yep.
And, like, that was my only exposure to it. So then when I started school and there were all these young people that were from Florida, because it later became a state school, so it was, like, a little bit cheaper. That's also why I went there. So about half of my friends were from Florida and the rest of us were from out of state.
Did you still get the hippie treatment after it became a state school?
Oh, yes.
Oh, great.
It became a state school in the 70s.
Oh, awesome.
And was still, although I am part of a Facebook group of alums and current students that is wild and fun to read. Because every time, like, so the cops, the campus cops were all retired NYPD.
Whoa.
So nice. They didn't give a shit. Oh. They were retired.
Oh.
They just wanted to chill. And they knew what they were... Like, they had their cop experience.
Oh, right.
They just... Like, they were so nice. Officer Vickers, rest in peace. He died earlier this year. Would, like, give me rides on the golf cart. And, like, he didn't care if we were drinking or smoking weed out in public. Like, he just wanted us to be safe.
Hey, no triple homicides.
And they were all... Like,
smoke
yeah.
weed all you
like,
want.
They
no
were
homicide.
All, like, so chill. And amazing, but now I guess there was like an overdose, and I think there might have even been a death on campus in the last couple of years, so they've been understandably cracking down.
Sure.
But at the same time, there's been a lot of talk in this Facebook group about how New College is not what it used to be. And
I feel like that's pretty much what getting older is.
But I feel it, especially. I'm like, what? They're not allowed to just smoke weed in public? That's part of the New College experience.
Sure.
It's very, yeah, it's a weird place.
When I started college, I went to college in Dallas, and my freshman year, the law hadn't changed yet from open containers, so you could have open containers. So when I started college, I was like, what is this insanity? What's going on with all these people just carrying around beers everywhere? And then the next year it changed. And that thus began the people talking about how much better it was when we could be standing around drinking beers. And I was like, it's really, we just go inside. It's very close.
I didn't really have a concept of that because I didn't drink, like in high school I drank at friends' houses occasionally. But like, it wasn't until I went to college and you could drink anywhere on campus.
Right.
Because the cops didn't care. So it was weird when I was like 22 and, like, entering the world, and you couldn't just carry drinks around with you anywhere.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, this has been part of my whole drinking career. I don't know what to do with this.
Yeah.
What are all these rules?
I don't understand your laws. Did you move somewhere? Yeah, right? Mm-hmm. It's just a can. He waves at you.
Don't you put a lid on him.
Where did you move? Did you stay in Florida after college?
No.
Or did you go somewhere else?
I got the fuck out. Well, I went to my mom's house in Maine.
Back to Maine.
And had the worst 6 months of my life.
Sure. We all do the return to mom right after college.
Well, it was like I was either going to have them pay my rent somewhere else.
Sure.
Or go live with them. Mm-hmm. And it was like, well, at least that's like the honest thing to do, in my opinion.
Yeah.
For me in that situation. So I moved home and I mean, to be fair, my mom, my parents lived in Acadia National Park, not in the park itself, right next, like literally their land borders the park.
Awesome.
So like on this idyllic, beautiful island in Maine. It was not a terrible place to be.
I was going to say, is that where you grew up or just where they,
They moved settled? There when I was in college. So I grew up in Portland. And then when I was in college, they moved up there.
Right on. That sounds gorgeous.
It was. So I stayed there for 6 months and then I was about to move to Austin. I was choosing between Austin and New York, for acting. Because at the time, Austin was going to be the new big film place.
Ah, yes.
And I hated the cold. And I was also, I was 22 and scared of New York.
It's very scary.
Because it's expensive and scary.
Mm-hmm.
And then I instead followed my best friend from childhood to Brazil.
Ooh.
Because I didn't want to start life yet.
Sure.
So I moved to Brazil for 4 months and taught English with her in this program her dad had started. And that was real fun.
That's fun and safe.
Because
her, meaning like, because her dad's
part of the people running it. He was there sometimes.
But see, at least it's a legit place to work.
I mean, you did go to school in Florida, though, so I feel like you were prepared for some random.
I definitely saw some sketchy stuff in Brazil. But I was so nervous about the safety because the only thing I knew about Brazil was City of God. That movie had just come out, like, within the last couple of years. And I remember I didn't know a single word of Portuguese. I had studied French in school.
That'll get you farther than Spanish, I guess.
Actually, no.
Really?
At least where I was in southern Brazil, and, like, it's so close to Argentina that, like, the other volunteers who were fluent in Spanish picked it up really quickly. Not that I was fluent in French in any way. But it took me months just to figure out how to pronounce things.
Yeah.
Because the pronunciation was so wild. Like, I memorized some phrases in a book because I accidentally, in buying my plane tickets, flew into one Sao Paulo airport and then had to fly out of the other one to get to the city I was going to.
Oh, God.
So I had to take a bus between the two airports, and I remember, like, just memorizing all the phrases I thought I might need for that, and anything I tried to say, nobody understood at all, because it was, like, in a French accent, or, like, what I thought Portuguese should sound like. But I didn't feel super unsafe there. There was a time, like, a couple of times, like, that were sketchy. Like, one time, there was a bar that we were told not to go to because it was the cocaine bar.
Wait, the cocaine bar in Brazil?
Yeah.
Meaning, like, you could get cocaine there, or that's where all the cocaine trafficking happens?
That was the most cocaine in one bar per street.
I believe it was the bar where you went to buy and sell cocaine.
Okay.
I don't really know.
Yeah,
I just don't. The one, our local friend was like, don't go there, that's a cocaine bar.
Okay.
It's not like people were just doing it in the bathrooms. It was like, this is where you will get in trouble.
It's where all the world's cocaine is made.
I was like, it's just tables and tables of just people doing cocaine.
So of course, one night after drinking, I was like, we need to go see it.
Sure.
So I made one of my friends go with me. And he was a guy, and I decide to go to the bathroom. I go into the bathroom, and this sketchy dude follows me into the bathroom.
Oh, boy.
So I just turned around, and we was like, okay, we're leaving. We hadn't gotten drinks yet. It was fine. Nothing happened. And then another time I decided to... This is wild. Being young is wild. I was going to the gym before work, before it was light out.
Yeah.
I was walking to the gym.
I like how you say it.
Well, it's just so wild, the idea of getting up that early. Like, yeah. I work out sometimes now, but it's a huge effort and it's hard.
Well, not if you haven't had a cocaine bar before.
Yeah, exactly.
You're ready for some morning stretches. I don't know.
I can just see there being like, don't go to that gym. That's the cocaine gym. Yeah. Don't go to that library. That's the cocaine library. No reading gets done there. That's literally just...
You read the same page over and over and over. And keep getting distracted by your great ideas.
Yeah, it's all just law books about how to get away with cocaine.
But this guy followed me to the gym.
Same guy?
No. Just like... I mean, maybe. I don't know.
Just never stopped following.
I just, like, had this guy follow me for four months.
Yeah, I'm trying to give you hundreds of dollars of cocaine.
But eventually, he was following me for enough blocks that I was like, okay, I'm going to hold my keys like a stab weapon. And then, I think he was homeless, and I think he was intoxicated, and I think he decided to go back to sleep. Sure. So he only followed me for a few blocks.
You didn't say anything to him?
No, he was far enough behind me that I didn't feel like I needed to. Mm. Like, I wasn't, like, I could have run, but I was like, maybe that would be too much. And I knew my roommate was, like, slower to wake up and was, like, on his way. So I knew, like, I had someone I knew coming 10 minutes later.
Sure.
But it ended up not being an issue. Yeah. But then another volunteer got, like, robbed 3 different times at knife point or gunpoint.
Hmm.
But I didn't experience that at all.
Where was that person from? The person who got knife point.
Oh, sweet boy. He was Canadian.
Exactly.
And Mormon.
Oh.
And gay.
Oh, my God.
So, like, he was
had
just...
a target on his back.
The nicest... No, he literally gave a guy a shirt off his back one time. And
not at knife point.
No, I think that was at knife point.
Oh.
He gave a guy a shirt off his back. He got his camera stolen. He got his wallet stolen.
Oh.
I
have always felt that... any time I have had narrowly escaped being attacked was usually because I give off this vibe of don't fuck with me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I have a sort of, like, the way I move kind of, especially when I know I'm in a dangerous, the whole time I lived in New York, I would walk a certain way, I'd look around and give dirty looks to everybody.
Yeah.
You know, just to make sure that we had that circles. And I've been followed a few times and had given them, you know, turned around and been all like,
yeah.
You know, giving them a rough face so that they, like, see me, and then I'm like, you're not messing with me. And then they've turned around, or they've, like, said something to me, like, what? And I was all like, phone? Only a couple times has it been, like, real creepers where I've had to seek out the help of other people around.
Yeah.
Where I'm all like, hi, I know that we're strangers, and you guys are just standing on this corner right now, but I'm pretty sure there's a guy following me. Can I just keep talking to you? And they're like, sure, sure. And I'm like, thank you so much for that. I'm just going to keep chatting with you guys like we're all pals. That's been a rough time.
Well, I do remember the one self-defense class I ever took in, like, high school.
I'm so glad you took one. I don't think I ever did.
Well, the main thing they say, this one person said this one time, was, like, the more assertive you can be at the, like, from the get-go, the less likely an attack will happen.
Sure.
Now, that's not to say it's anyone's fault if they get attacked. There are obviously...
A lot of variables.
People that... Yeah, exactly. But because it's often a... when someone attacks you, it's wanting power...
Yeah.
That if you seem like a bigger challenge to take power from, it's going to deter some people.
Yeah.
So, like, being really loud and assertive and not timid is supposed to help. I don't know if there's science behind this or what the... It makes sense to me.
It would make sense in an animal way.
Yeah.
Like if you're thinking about, like, one animal versus another. Yeah, I mean, like, when you have to sort of make the bear feel like, you know, I'm more trouble than it's worth.
Yeah.
You know, and if that's the case in a sort of, you know, animal visceral way, then I'm sure that's the case with human beings. If somebody gets up in our face, we don't want that. You know, whereas if it's a... And I feel like that poor gentleman who experienced knife point, the idea of that seems, like, more slipped in. Like, it's not like somebody comes at you and yells with a knife. They, like, sneak up behind you.
Yeah.
And so that's sort of a different kind of attack.
Yeah, and I also think... I mean, there are also just probably people with other issues going on that might affect this theory.
Sure.
You know, if someone is on a substance that's going to alter their brain significantly or has a severe mental illness or something that makes them, you know, there are things that could be happening where this would not be the case, where they might feel threatened and get even angrier when you get loud.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, if someone's clearly on meth, I'm probably not going to be aggressive towards them.
Yeah.
Because that seems like maybe not the best idea. Not that I would even know what that...
Or like how to diagnose it. Or
yeah,
like,
exactly.
Yeah.
Like I'm some expert.
In
someone
fact,
who seems like they're on what I think meth is.
The other day, there was a... Some of our neighbors in the area are what we refer to as thugs, because there's a couple of guys that like definitely have had some cops come to their house, like here while we're here.
Oh,
so I was all like, oh, trouble. What's going on over there? But one day I got out of the car and I was like, do you smell that? What's that weird smell? And Chris, my husband, is like, get in the house right now. And
oh,
I was
no.
like, what? And he was like, get in the house right now. And yeah, when I got in the house, he was like, that was crack. And if you smell that again, that's someone within no, like, smell
yeah.
shot.
Yeah,
you
gotta have been,
of,
you gotta be like downwind of that.
Yeah, so he's like, it's probably the thugs. Because most of the other people within close enough to smell what they're doing, it's like family. So it's like, unless, you know, you smell weed, it can come from anywhere, but crack. He was like, get in the house, who's smoking crack? People who do crack are wild, like, you know, like you're saying about meth, like, they could do anything, there's no way to know, lock the door. So I was like, oh boy. And he's like, if you smell that again, you watch out. And I was like, oh my good lord. You know, it's like, what a crazy thing. But yeah,
I
mean, it's hard to tell otherwise unless you know what to smell
yeah.
for. I don't know.
I feel like that Canadian guy was probably just like, he just fell victim to like the scuttlebutt inside of the like mugger community. It's like, hey, there's gonna be this guy that's smiling all the time. It's always walking around this one spot. He's gonna give you a shirt. All you gotta do is like point a stick.
Oh yeah, once he gave that shirt, I'm sure it spread like wildfire that
yeah.
he was the guy.
Yeah, yeah, just free shirts.
Yeah,
I think he also just, he was from like the country and had never,
it's hard to know. His religious background might like lend itself to the idea where it's like,
yeah,
oh, let me reach out
and
help
everyone.
Or, and also to help them. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, oh, if you're trying to rob from me, that means you need something. How
exactly.
can I help you? You don't have to rob from me. We can be friends. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
I see that.
I don't remember. And I think also some of it was just luck, like, for sure. But it definitely sucked. I felt very bad.
I'm glad that you didn't get too much more than that in your experience. You were there for 4 months,
four
you
months?
Said?
Yeah, honestly, it's not... I mean, there are unsafe parts of Brazil and there are unsafe parts of everywhere in the world.
Sure.
But for the most part, like, when I did stupid shit, I would be in unsafe situations.
Sure.
But, like, for the most part, I felt very safe. We went to a neighborhood where we were teaching that people who lived were in other parts of the town would be like, oh my God, I can't believe you're teaching. And it was called Bom Jesus, which is how they say Jesus, which is good Jesus, the good Jesus neighborhood.
Yeah.
But they saw it as like favela. But I mean, we were there in the daytime, but everyone was so nice and awesome, and it never was scary at all. So I think there was also just, like, a lot of prejudice and, like, not that dangerous stuff doesn't happen there. It had the country has a lot of stuff going on, or I don't keep up to date with anything, but, like,
as I don't know. As, like, in-house prejudices, like, with, like, territory lines and stuff, or, like, county lines?
For sure. Like, definitely, like, people from... And I feel like I am such a... Like, I have such limited experience. I don't want to proclaim to be an expert on any of this in any way.
Sure.
In my limited experience, people had a prejudice against, like, this neighborhood that... was not warranted. And, like, I'm sure I could have gotten myself in unsafe situations in that neighborhood, but also in the fancier neighborhood where we were living.
Yeah. Well, but it's like that everywhere. Yeah. People always do that. Like, when I lived in Dallas, I lived in this section of town where there was one street, Turtle Creek, and on one side was the richest, fanciest houses owned by, like, the Bushes and stuff. Mm-hmm. And then on the other side were these small two-bedroom houses that we assumed belonged to the, like, that originally belonged to the, like, you know, servants of right. that side. Because it was, like, it was rows and rows of these tiny houses.
Yeah.
And then on the other side, there were these humongous mansions. And they were so close.
Yeah.
And people would always talk about the neighborhood that I lived in, like, it was bad and there was all these drugs. And I was like, I'm sorry, do you want to cross the street and see what kind of drugs the kids in the big mansions are going to give you? Like, it's exactly the same. Either get your drugs from the rich people or get them from the poor people, but they're all the same.
For sure.
And it's all the same situation.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, so I hate when that happens, when it's like, you know, they say, oh, well, that must be the bad neighborhood. And it's like, there's must be some sort of, like, racial or, like, just, you know, caste system... prejudice.
There's definitely, like, some coded stuff going on in a lot of those conversations. Coded racism. Or not even coded. But... And that was actually the interesting thing about, in my experience of Brazil. Like, the economic disparity and racial disparity, there was a correlation like there is here. But it didn't seem quite as, like, it seemed more diverse in a good way, in some ways. But then there were also, like, just, like, really blatant racism stuff that everyone was just like, oh, yeah. There was a lot, I don't know, it was just, like, it was a weird mix of, like, we're a very diverse culture, and that's awesome, and we accept that. But also, like, we're going to say really racist things. And, like, again, I had 4 months of very small little slice into this world. I would not begin to call myself knowledgeable. But it was interesting to see... I don't know. I felt like there was less segregation than there is in our country.
Yeah.
Not that they don't have other problems, but it seemed like at least people were around each other and exposed to each other.
What's interesting about that is it's when I was growing up, like, in Boston, they talk about the South like it's hugely racist. And yet when I moved down here, I realized, I know a lot of people consider Texas a different thing than the South, as it were. But still, when I moved down to Texas... I realized that most of the people that you encounter that are racist are just more direct about it. In Boston, people are entirely racist.
Oh, yeah.
And it's very segregated. There is specific areas of town where Irish people are, where Italian people are, where Chinese people are. And you're like, are you telling me that for real they still live in these neighborhoods?
Yeah.
Still to this day, and they don't go into each other's neighborhoods or each other's businesses, and they talk about each other like they're, you know, total enemies. And you're like, you guys are, like, what is the problem here? And then they also, but at the same time, they're the first ones who are talking about how the South is so backwards. Yeah. And how, like, where, you know, everyone's walking around with guns trying to shoot black people. And I'm like, you wouldn't talk to a black person if, like, the people who are posting this that I know from, like, high school, I'm like, you wouldn't talk to a black person if they, like, were trying to hand you money. Like, you are hugely racist. Like, what are you talking about? It's a wild thing to have noticed, and they still do it. And my Facebook feed is chock full of friends that are still in Boston posting things about how backwards the South is.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you're fighting the wrong fight. Mm-hmm. We are not against each other. But I feel like part of that's probably what some of the people you're encountering. It's the same thing. We all need to feel like there's an enemy or like there's somebody we're better than. And it's like, can we just relax? Like, you can be like, I'm better than everyone, but to say specific groups, like, hey, man.
Yeah. That was it. Because we have the similar growing up in the Northeast, moving South. I definitely didn't realize how racist the Northeast was until I moved to the South. And clearly, South also very racist. But, it's just closeted racism.
Yeah.
And New England's weird, or Maine is specifically weird because it's so white. Mm-hmm. There's so little diversity that, like, it was easier for people to hide their racism because they didn't have to ever deal with it.
Yeah.
You know, like, but at the same time, it was clearly there. It just, like, I never heard anyone ever say the N-word growing up.
Sure. Yeah, I didn't either.
It was a shock to me the first time I heard someone say it. I was visiting a friend in Louisiana. I was like, I could not believe an adult human could say that word. Like, it and I grew up in a also very liberal, like, bubble, too. Like, my parents are super liberal and, like, never would have ever said that. But at the same time, like, I feel like a lot of the people in New England who would never say that word are still fucking racist and are still, like...
Yeah.
So, the first time... And I realized this working in the restaurant industry because there's this sort of, like... There's this weird forced statistical racism that people just sort of, like, lean into.
I hated that part of being a waiter. Like,
When
and they
try
to base it on facts and shit?
Okay, well...
They're like, statistically, this percentage of... And you're like, how about you shut the fuck up?
Yeah, well, it's like, I came from South Carolina, you know, and it was like, whatever, you know, whatever came in, people just talked about their dislike or their like or whatever out loud in a way that was, like, emotive. I remember coming here and people hassling me because I was from South Carolina and saying, like, wow, what a racist place. And then... turning around and, like, complaining because they had a table of Canadians.
Yeah. Yes, that's the code word.
Yeah.
What
in the serve industry.
That was my whole thing. Is I was like, oh, man.
I mean, it's literal coding. It's dog whistle.
Is they said that, and I was like, oh, man, that's crazy. They must be, like, super friendly. Like, the first time somebody said that to me.
Me, too. I thought they were really talking about Canadians.
Yeah, and they were like, oh, no. And I was like, oh, well, what? Wait a minute.
Yeah.
Like, it was one of those things where I was like, you don't, but you think you're less racist than anybody. I was like, South Carolina, servers are servers no matter what, and whatever they deal with, they have their own prejudices, but, like, the only difference really here is that you are thinking, or you're, like, telling yourself that you're not racist because you're not saying the one word.
Yeah.
You're just kind of, like, bypassing the nomenclature in a way that is like, well, I didn't have that word in my head, so I am not a racist. I can just have shitty thoughts about a group of people that I call Canadian because that's so, and the insinuation there that Canadians are the polar opposite or, like, this strong code, it's like, that's way too much thought. I'm sorry, like South Carolina, for all it's worth, it has its failings. But at least they just, like, didn't sit there and think of a way that they could feel better about their bigotry.
You know, like...
Yeah.
Like in like
South Carolina, they'll shoot you right in the face.
Well, I mean, they're bigots and they own being bigots. It's like, you're a bigot and you tell yourself you're not all the time and then tell yourself that other people are because you have fun, cute little words. It's like...
It's funny how that is. Like, I feel like I'm interested to see how in the next few years, the way a lot of the societal differences that are coming about now will change that. And even change the idea of racism in the way that it is. Because,
yeah.
Like, it's one thing to be... Like, I totally understand the idea of being nervous about the other. Something that you're unaware of.
Sure, sure.
Okay, if you've never been into, like, a Mexican restaurant, maybe you're afraid to order because you don't know what to order, what's good here. Or you're concerned about this group. And a lot of racism comes from one interaction with one person. Like, somebody's a dick to you, and then forever you hate people that look like that one guy because they remind you of that. And it sucks. But I'm hoping that a lot of the changes that are coming about now will open our eyes. And I actually was thinking the other day how I'm just at the cusp of what I will call right now the woke culture. And I really feel like I'm the oldest. Like,
mm-hmm.
Like I'm the older generation that someday will go, ah, I remember when we became woke. Like, because I'm still not woke enough. And no matter what I do, I still think things sometimes that are old school. And I'll hear,
yeah.
I'll feel myself doing it or something will happen or I'll be in a group of people that are 25 and they will all agree on something and I'll go, I don't know why
this.
I don't agree with
yeah.
them. What about the way my brain works is different that needs to be adjusted? And I've also talked to other friends of mine in their, like, 40s and 50s who are also having issues with, like, okay, it's getting different. Like, we've got to make sure, you know, like, the idea of being proud of being a bigot or hiding that, it's becoming less and less able to be done and
yeah.
without it being a humongous deal to everyone around you.
And, like, the thing is, though, about that is those people are going to be the ones that are dealt with first in this, like, when we do move forward in this, like, sort of
who are
like,
those people in this scenario?
The people that are just out loud bigots. The people that don't know better than to try to hide it. In a cute, fun, wordsy kind of way.
Oh,
whereas
so the out louds will go first.
We'll burn that through.
And then,
you know,
the hidden
and then that'll
ones
be like,
will
we,
take
those
a little bit
of
time.
People. Exactly. And then there's going to be all of these people
that still have the gross
that
beliefs.
Bigotry,
yeah.
That are just buried deep because they learned the words that they don't have, that they shouldn't
yeah.
say. So
oh, well, there's always that. I mean, it's like they're the cockroaches of our culture, you know.
Well, yeah,
but
yeah.
They live forever holding their anger and bitterness, and it changes where the effort was at one point. It was like they look different from us, and then now I think the major cutoff is money. You know, it's like that's the big thing. That's
yeah.
the new way that people can hate each other. It's
yeah.
like, oh, I can't believe those rich people. It's like you can't just hate them because they're rich. Like you just can't. I'm sorry. Maybe they stole all their money and that's not cool, but I didn't. You can't just hate people for some one reason.
I disagree. I can hate them. It doesn't affect them.
Be careful,
them.
We're recording this. People are going to hear you saying you're the
all
first
the rich
one.
People that listen.
I'm
telling
like,
you, there's so many on our on our listening.
No, yeah, I can hate them and it doesn't
high
affect
power.
Them. And I feel like that's the one group of people that I'm just, I like. It's,
they're so privileged that.
My hatred
yeah.
should bounce
it's not
going to
oppress them in
like,
any way.
Yeah, like, just little
guys,
paper,
more money,
little
more problems. Come on now. They're just sad and alone. They're just Scrooge McDuckin' through some money crying because they have no friends.
I don't know, man.
Remember when Joey cried and they played All By Myself and he had the water feature and he looked through it? He was so rich. He had so much money at
is
that point.
Is this Friends?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I never watched the last couple of seasons.
Oh, no, this is early on.
Oh, okay,
this
forgot
is when
that.
He first got his first soap opera gig. He moved
oh,
into an apartment
yeah.
by himself.
Okay, it's been a minute. I need to rewatch
it. I watch
it
so often. It's not you, it's me making a weird Friends reference just to poke at Wendell.
Yeah.
One last question.
Yeah.
Because
we've gotten
talked about some wild stuff, and I like it. It's cool. But what's your project right now? Like, what are you working on?
Oh.
What's, or if you don't have a specific,
yeah.
like, show that you do, like, what's your, like, creative thing that's, like, you've been working on or you've been thinking about? What's going on for you right now?
Well, most of my focus right now is on Pendulum, which is a sketch group. We have a monthly show at Cold Town.
Focuses on the social hierarchies in Brazil.
And then, well, I am going to grad school in the fall.
Oh.
To become a social worker.
Whoa.
So, yeah, that is kind of something. No. I'm thinking about social inequality a lot.
No, yeah.
That's huge.
Yeah.
That's, really big. That's a like, big thing to take on.
Thank you in advance.
Yeah.
Because that's some serious... But it's like...
I'm probably going to become a therapist.
That's helpful
so,
to people.
Well, it's, yeah, it's good.
That... Not quite the I don't know.
You might not work for the state, but it'll still be hard.
Yeah, I do. We'll see what happens. We'll see what I end up being interested in. But yeah, Pendulum, we're going to be in Sketchfest. I don't know when this will come out. That might have already happened.
I don't know when is Sketchfest.
May 25th is our show.
Oh, I don't think you'll...
So go back in time. And no, but we have a show every third Thursday at Cold Town. And then Stool Pigeon is every Sunday night at Cold Town. That's an improv show.
And you're in that one as well?
Mm-hmm. And then Three on a Match has shows. Also improv. And Big Shed. Also improv.
So you have a lot of stuff.
I have too much stuff.
That's a lot of trips.
And you're going to be saving children?
Well, we'll see. Maybe adults. We all need saving.
It's true.
But...
Especially those of us on the cusp of wokeness.
No, but I do think...
You need to counsel me through it. I want to be nice to people. How can I stop my brain?
There is a cultural
Sometimes
shift...
I think negative things.
...that we've gone through. I think we're around the same age. Like, the cultural shift that, like, we've witnessed. That, like, even if we're 100% on board with it, there are a few things that have been trained into our brains that we have to sort of relearn. Retrain those neural pathways. I think it's great.
I have weird stuff about women.
Like,
that's what I was trying to think of what to put.
Stuff about how, about, you know, when people talk, I just recently read an article about, you know, like, women writers in comedy and stuff like that. And every time I read them, I just believe the hype on the other side where they're like, well, they meant to do it, but they just... And I'm like, maybe they meant to do it. And I'm like, why am I thinking this? Why am I like a lot... Like, hire some people. Like, I don't have to allow them to be like, you know, we tried really hard. But
well,
like,
but when we were coming up
it's like,
in comedy,
no.
We also had to deal... Like, I remember whenever I would try to bring up sexism in comedy... I would get told, well, maybe you're just not as funny.
Right.
Or, like, they just pick the best people. It just happens to be all men. This happened, like, twice. But at the same time, I remember
it. I used to have
a
story that I told about how, like, I have received very little, like, pushback in my career. Mostly people have said, sure, you want to do that? Go ahead. And that's always been something that I've really appreciated about everything that's happened. I'm like, oh,
yeah,
thank goodness doors have just opened, or like I've asked questions and people go, sure. And I'm like, oh God, thank goodness. But I met this girl when I worked at Dallas Theater Center who was complaining that she was not a directing intern and that the directing interns that year were these two guys. But the guys that she was mad at, what one guy was 20 years older than all of us, so clearly he had some experience. And the other guy was a guy that, like, I knew personally that had, like, worked on Broadway shows. And I was like, these two guys are, like, super qualified.
Yeah.
Like,
and
I was like, I'm really sorry that you didn't get this, but, like,
definitely the case
these
sometimes.
Two dudes really had a lot of stuff. And I always think about that when I was dealing with stuff, like, well, maybe they were just more qualified,
mm-hmm.
like you were saying. But really, it's like, I've just got to be, like, accept the idea that, yeah, maybe in some cases it was the qualifications, but sometimes it wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to, like, accept that
and
that was a real
thing. We were trained to accept what wasn't fair.
Yeah.
And so it is kind of ingrained. It's taken me a minute to be like, no, fuck that.
Yeah, I have a hard time with that. I have a real hard time.
And
like, when diversity scholarships include women, I feel real bad. I'm
yeah.
Like, no.
Me too. I'm like, I'm white.
No,
so
no. I'm fine.
Yeah.
No, no.
Yeah,
I get everything
mm-hmm.
I want. I should not be able to get a diversity
yeah.
scholarship.
And not that we don't have privilege,
so
certainly.
Upset.
But
yeah.
But yeah, like, the fact...
No, no, no.
Yeah, it's interesting. We all need to continue to work on our lives.
It's just so interesting how that is, and I wonder, I look forward to continuing to being your friend throughout the process, because, like, the more stuff that you learn about it, like, help me be woke. So, you know, it'd be like, the more things that, you know, you learn in your classes, like, I'm sure they're talking about stuff because society is so different. You must, just dealing with it on all levels, from kids to how people deal with their kids to, like, to adults to the changing, ever-changing rules.
As much as the world is kind of a garbage fire right now, I'm weirdly optimistic that progress is still gonna win, and we're gonna find a way, like, to become better.
I think so.
And also, it's weird. It's optimism, but it's also pessimism in the sense that we've always been totally fucked in a totally terrible place.
Yeah.
So there's that. And then also, I do think progress is happening. Like, just in our lifetimes, we've witnessed, like, the fact that I didn't know the word transgender as a child. Mm-hmm. And now, not that there isn't quite a bit more progress to be made, but, like, the fact that people are talking about transgender people's rights and safety is great.
Yeah. And that there are children that know the word and are aware mm-hmm. of the respect they need to pay to certain people. And, you know, like...
And we live in Austin, and I know that's a huge...
The bubble is nice. Yeah, you're right.
The bubble is nice. There's a lot of work to be done.
Every time somebody moves away, even if they're going to New York and L.A., usually if they're going to New York and L.A., I go, just be aware. It's not like this anywhere else.
Yeah.
You're going to go there, and I'm sure La La Land is nice, but they're not, it's not like play a ukulele and get a piece of pizza. No, it's not that kind of town. You can't dance in the rain and everyone thinks you're charming. No one's into it.
It's like, I haven't done, give me your ukulele and eat this pizza while I jerk off.
It's like, shave your beard now. No one wants it.
Yeah. I thank God for Austin and just the, like, crash course I've got in wokeness coming from where I did. I feel like I just learned so much, like, right out of the gate, and I just kind of kept going. I'm not woke enough, but I'm also learning that, like, the parts that I'm not woke on, I'm real quiet about in my head, and I'm not mad about it.
I'm learning to learn.
Yeah, that's my whole thing. Yep. It's like, everything that I just feel like is, like, I'm just like, okay.
If we can be adults willing to learn, I think that is a bigger step than, like, all the generations. Like, my grandparents, my parents, their people, their generations were not willing to open up. Yeah. They were like, I know what I know, and that's it.
Yeah.
Whereas now it's like, I'm turning 40 this year, and I'm like, I need to open my mind to a bigger world. And the fact that I think societally, the fact that we have decided that we can learn, that it's a never-ending process, and not like, well, I'm an adult now, I'm finished.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that helps us be
I think, like,
more
the more
open.
Confused I'm going to be by it, like, or that I will be by it at the end, I think the more exciting, like, it'll be in the long run. Like every time I'm just like, holy cow, that's where we are now. Like, that's how far we've progressed is where we're at. And, like, the more I'm just like, I have no basis to even, like, really understand that thought process is, like, really exciting to me, just because I feel like how many generations got to see that much progress in one
mm-hmm.
lifetime, you know? Like,
mm-hmm.
there's a lot of just doing the same shit for a long time and everybody keeping their nose down. And
I feel like the fact that I have been able to really genuinely open my mind to ideas that I, even just a few years ago, like, couldn't wrap my head around makes me hopeful.
Yeah.
And, like, yes, I am someone who was always taught to be open and progressive, but that doesn't mean I'm good at it, you know?
Also, accepting what your parents teach you is very difficult. Almost
that's
all of
true.
Us are rejecting.
I mean,
some
I could have become Alex P.
Are.
Keaton and become a Republican and shamed my parents.
I mean, yeah. I went to a lot of rallies as a kid. That's why I don't really go to many now, because I'm like, nah, I did it.
Oh yeah.
Like for years, my mom would take us and dress us up.
We went to a lot of like Democratic fundraisers and like
so many.
Oh, that's so funny. We have such like interesting like similarities to our youth.
Yeah, I went. I carried picket signs. Mm-hmm. That's where I started theater. Was in front of adult crowds at political fundraisers.
Yeah.
People would be like, aren't you cute? And then I was like, really? Okay. And then I'd do a little song and dance number, mm-hmm. and they'd go, ah! And I was like, and my mom would give me the thumbs up from across the room as she's, you know, doing whatever political thing she's doing.
Funny. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. It's funny how that is.
There's a storm.
Oh, goodness. Storms are brewing. Texas thunderstorms are the craziest,
they're
too.
They're wild. I love them, though. Mm-hmm. They scare me, but they're...
Goodness. Well, on the... that sound of thunder means we're done. I arrange it
God
with the weather.
Ended.
That's the music playing. Thank you so much for sitting down with us.
Thanks for having me.
A wildly interesting conversation.
We went everywhere.
Yeah,
that was
really super exciting.
All across the globe.
Really awesome. And then... thank you so much, and have a wonderful night. Thank you, everybody, for listening.
Hey, marry me, Michelle. It's been a while.
Yeah, right? I was kind of waiting for it.
Hey, thanks for listening to the Yes But Why podcast.